Do you realize there's only two ways to provide value to people? One is to give them more of what they like, what's working, and what they know. The other way we provide value is to take away what they don't like, what's not working, or what they don't know. And so for me, in the simplification of value, and clearly with a definite purpose and a control of my impulse, now I simply just have to be more interested. Tell me, what are you doing today? What do you like? What don't you like? What's working? What's not working? What do you know about it? What don't you know about it? And finally, would it help you if I did this?
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. We have a legend in the field that's here to share some insights for those who want to get your idea out, those of you who want to build a business with a lot of success, connect with amazing people, and truly embrace sales as a beautiful tool that, listen to this, allows you to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. If you've heard that tagline before, you know exactly who I'm speaking about. We got David Meltzer, who's joining me. If you're not familiar with David, he is a legendary sports executive, served as CEO for Leigh Steinberg Sports and Entertainment Agency. You might have seen the movie Jerry Maguire, and he would have been the inspiration behind that content. He's been an executive producer for the Apple TV series Two Middle Drill and Office Hours. You can actually see him helping a lot of people do their elevator pitch. So we're going to speak about that, and you're going to learn a thing or two, whether you're trying to bring your ideas forward, you're trying to get that next promotion, you want to sell that product or service or raise funds, pitching, sales, they're at the foundation of everyone. And we got the foundation of everything. And we got David, who's going to tell us more about it. David, welcome to the show.
Oh, what a pleasure. No better topic to talk about than what other people call sales. For me, I talk about value and vision and being able to articulate a value and vision to exceed what you're asking for, maybe connotated or explained as sales, but helping so many people around the world live in abundance is my mission that actually brings the commission. So it's great to be here.
I love that you have that frame. And here's one thing I've noticed with guests, and for those who've been listening to the show, you've probably started to notice the pattern. Massively successful people seem to have a way of looking at sales in a beautiful way, but sales gets a bad rap and it looks like a dirty word. Why do you think that is? And what happens when you make that switch and see it as an ally, not an enemy?
Well, the reason it has a bad rap is that a lot of people adhere to selling in a format which was what I call David Meltzer 1.0. How many of us think of sales and think of overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, cheating? All of those things are aligned with some people's philosophies and execution of sales. And I will tell you humbly that that's what my philosophy was of selling, was an outcome-based sale, not a value and a vision, a collaboration and a coordination between two people to give them true value. And so I would adhere to overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, and cheating other people and calling that sales. And it happens not just in profession, but it happened in my personal life. It almost destroyed me as a person and even my marriage, because I was a liar, a cheater, manipulator, overseller, and back-end seller at all times. Believe it or not, it can be genetically and energetically inherited, these personality traits as an energy. And so I have spent a majority of my life practicing selling in the wrong way, but now over 18 years of empowering not only myself, but now creating frameworks and techniques in order to facilitate letting everybody feel comfortable that selling can be really dirty, or it can be one of the greatest experiences that we can create between people as a conscious goodwill to do well and to do good at the same time, where you can make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun doing it. But I think it's fair that selling gets a bad rap because there's a high percentage of people that sell the wrong way and give it the wrong definition. And I know that from personal experience.
Well, Dave, I do appreciate your sharing that in a vulnerable way. I even speak in my book about how there's the sale that I made that I regretted. And that kind of became one of the moments where I was like, yo, this is not right. I can do better. There's a whole story where I had to shift how I looked into sales. But what I found unfortunate is that my transformation towards selling with love came on the back of someone else that I made a bad sale to. And I'm wondering if you've had a moment where that shift happened and it was like, yeah, we need to do things differently. Obviously, there were patterns I assume you saw weren't working both in business and personal, but was there a moment that you're like, hey, there's a better possibility here?
Yeah, well, thanks to my wife, there was, because the ultimate sale of my life was I met my wife in the fourth grade. I asked her to go study at sixth grade camp and she said no. I made fun of her and threw an egg at her and she didn't want anything to do with me. And then through being who I was and learning about selling the right way and taking stock in true values, she actually, in my late 20s, said yes to marrying me because of who I was at that time. But then the genetic and energetic inheritance and my desire to buy love and my misperception in the relationship I had with money, that it would buy me love and happiness, and it was my identity. Think about this. I was worth over $100 million, and if my bank account went up $100, I would be happy. If it went down $100, I'd be sad. I would feel bad about myself. And so there came a day when I came home after lying to my wife, overselling her, back end selling her, and cheating, that I faced her and she told me that she was leaving me and taking my three daughters because I needed to take stock in who I was and what did I wanted to become, or else I would be dead. And she didn't want to hang out to see what my future was going to be like because she knew what it was going to be like because of my behaviors of lying, cheating, manipulating, and overselling and back end selling. At that time, I woke up the next morning saying that I hated my mom, I hated my dad, I hated my best friend, and now I hated my wife because they were the only ones that loved me enough to tell me the truth that they had had enough of this poor behavior, this idea of selling. They had been oversold one too many times. And as I sat there in bed thinking about how much I hated the four people that mean the most to me, I realized I hated myself. That I was a liar, a cheater, a back-end seller, an overseller, a manipulator, and that I wanted to do, as my wife stated, I was going to take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. And thank goodness my wife gave me an opportunity to prove that to her. And my mom, my best friend, and my dad were forgiving and loving enough to give me a chance to prove who I was and what I wanted to become. So for me, sales is everything. Sales is everything because without my understanding of it, I probably would be dead. I know I would be alone, which probably would have made me want to be dead anyway. So I owe everything to this journey. And that's why I'm on the mission I am, to help people make a lot of money, help a lot of people and have a lot of fun and sell with, as you say, love. And I say with the truth.
Oh, I love this story. And I think it's great for people who are tuning in who might want to go on this path of abundance and success and realize that there's a way to go towards it that's much healthier. And even if you find yourself with hints that you might be on the wrong path, and you've already spoken about the times of overselling, manipulation, like there's a almost a compulsory need, and you speak about perhaps even a genetic tendency that you feel like that's the only way to sell. But now that you've shifted into this much better model where fun is at the foundation, you want to help people, you're still making a lot of money. So what does that look like when you've actually adjusted to a proper sales ethics, mindset, or heart set?
What's so interesting, because I think when I started to simplify my mission of providing value and service to others, and so I really honed into the simplification of value itself. Do you realize there's only two ways to provide value to people? One is to give them more of what they like, what's working, and what they know. The other way we provide value is to take away what they don't like, what's not working, or what they don't know. And so for me, in the simplification of value, and clearly with a definite purpose and a control of my impulse, the need to oversell, back and sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat when I think I'm going to lose. When I can control my impulse, but clearly have a definite purpose of providing value, knowing what value was, now I simply just have to be more interested. And so I have a formula, which, by the way, I'm willing to send to everyone for free, david@dmeltzer.com, that says, tell me, according to the subject matter, topic, or expertise that we both are interested in, what are you doing today? What do you like? What don't you like? What's working? What's not working? What do you know about it? What don't you know about it? And finally, would it help you if? Would it help you if? Would it help you if I did this? And even more importantly, do you know anyone that can help me? And when we look at this infinite loop of giving, where I'm giving more, I'm given more, I receive more, and I ask for more than more, so I can give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, and ask for more than more than more, I start to realize that I'm on a journey of more than enough of everything for everyone. And I give people a freedom to change their mind. This is the second component of value. And I think a lot of people, even with good intentions, they're so stuck in an agreement, verbal, written, implied, with consideration, which is payment of some sort, consideration. They forget the one thing that's true about a sale, about a decision, about an agreement, that the minute, the instant that a decision and agreement is made, whether it's verbal, implied, or written, even with payment, time, emotion, and value are going to change. And if I don't go into a sale willing to adjust the agreement with an open mind, open heart, and open hands to allow someone to change their mind according to time, according to value and emotion, then I'm still in the realm of scarcity. And so not only have I elevated my process to be credible and emotionally connect to people, but to be capable not only of articulating a quantitative value to exceed what I'm asking for, but to allow for adjustment. Because I know time, emotion, and value are going to change. I actually give people the permission in all my sales to change their mind and say, no, give me my money back. Because if I can't do that, I don't want to be in that business. I don't want to be selling that. And this holds true, not just in a financial professional arrangement, but in my personal life with my children and my wife and my parents and all the people around me, I am abundant in my understanding that I know you promised to come to the birthday party on Sunday, but time, emotion, and value changed and you can't make it. I have no need to be right or offended or separate, inferior, superior, and to damage our relationships. I'm just grateful that you considered coming and appreciative that you have something better to do. And next time, I'll give you another invitation with the same open-minded, abundant attitude.
I definitely can see how this is an abundant mindset as opposed to scarcity by going with this approach. But most people get offended, insulted, disappointed. There's a lot of expectations that come from the original terms. When you have this flexible mindset that comes with, you know, a lot more of an abundance mindset, do you find it makes changes both on closing rates, satisfaction rates, and is it still something you need to personally process emotionally?
Well, I think you have to be very selective of what business opportunities that you take on. I think in your personal life, it is much easier, because the terms are much more adaptable and adjustable to the relativity association and the feeding and bleeding that benefit us in a relationship. But I think in the context, there's some businesses that it would be impossible to utilize my philosophy. And people ask me, what do you do? And you buy a house, you don't. No, it's impossible not to lock in terms. You know, I can't get a mortgage without locking in terms. The bank's not going to allow me to say, well, time, emotion, interest rate, you know, no problem. So, you know, what are you going to spend the majority of your time selling? And is it aligned with this philosophy? I wouldn't be a mortgage broker, but I've been on the buying and selling side of mortgages. And ironically, what's funny is most people don't even know, I adjusted and amended all of my mortgages during COVID. My wife told me, she learned on TikTok, and I didn't believe, or I wouldn't even go in, that if you had enough cash in the bank, that you could go to your bank and say, look, I don't want to refinance. If you're going to make me refinance, I'm going to go to another bank. If I have to go through all that, I already have my mortgages with you. I have millions of dollars of cash with you. I'm less of a risk if you lower my interest rate. And if you're going to force me to go through all this bullshit to prove I'm credit worthy, when obviously you're already holding my note and I'm credit worthy at a higher interest rate, I'll keep my money with you and I will be credit worthy at a lower rate, even more credit worthy. So amend my mortgage with one signature. And so with all of our properties, one signature, they amended the mortgage with all the exact terms, except for the mortgage rate was 2 points on average lower, which saved me an amazing amount of money. And I didn't even believe my wife was possible, but this is an abundant attitude. Right. And it shows you that even in places where terms that when you take on this energy, you find what you're given, even in the most stringent term-based opportunities, a mortgage. So the universe provides when you live in abundant opportunities, and you'll find that there are circumstances that it's impossible to adhere to, you know, being that open and abundant, but you don't have to oversell, back end sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat in that scarce modality.
This is a great tip for everyone who's going to feel like they have no control over any kind of contract. I think there's always a renegotiation open as well. I wanted to ask you about something you've been doing. I've noticed already you're running 2-minute drill. You're getting a lot of people that are pitching you their ideas, their businesses. And this is where you started to have a radar. So I'd be curious to know, when people are in the early stages of business, what are some of the biggest red flags and green flags you see when someone is excited about building up their business and they're going to be pitching you the idea? And I think for anybody at any stage of business, they're going to have to pitch their idea to get employees, to get funding, to sell their product and services. What are the major green and red flags you see from all these individuals you encounter?
Well, the number one green and red flag that exists is within the context of credibility. And what I mean by that is that people forget, if you're 100% credible, which is almost humanly impossible, unless it's to your mom, because our moms over love us and they, you know, probably dote on all of our actions and words most of the time. But if you could achieve 100% credibility, you wouldn't ever have to sell anyone. You would just tell them what to do. Meaning, hey, I'm 100% credible. Give me $1 million today. I'll send you back $2 million 24 months from now. Okay, you're 100% credible. There's no questions. Why I say this is that most people don't realize how important credibility is. So they either unintentionally or intentionally lie, manipulate, cheat, oversell, or back-end sell, because they haven't gone through their pitch with a fine-tooth comb of perceptive credibility. They haven't gone through it and done the work of, if I told you my revenue was up 300%, how could people perceive that? Maybe they didn't believe me because maybe they thought, wow, he must have done like $3 last year and now he's at $9. So I better include the actual amounts and say, you know, I did $1 million my first year. And in my second year, I did 3 million. My profits were up 300%. And so that's an unintentional perceptive credibility problem. And I find that a lot of times, the biggest red flags are the people aren't prepared. They haven't practiced. They don't know their own business. They're not comfortable and confident in what they're talking about. They have no capability because of that to articulate a value to exceed what they're asking for. And believe it or not, most people that haven't done the work, that aren't prepared, are not comfortable and confident in articulating a value to exceed what they're asking for, don't ask. So the number one red flag of a pitch is there's no ask. I've done 8 or 9 seasons of Elevator Pitch with Entrepreneur Magazine. I've done 7 seasons of 2-Minute Drill. I just completed my 2nd season of Go Fund Yourself on Cheddar. And I am amazed. I give tips all the time, right? The perfect pitch tips. I have training guides. I probably have more videos on sales with the 3 no rule, the 25 no rule. It has to be out there if you're more interested than interesting. that you should have an ask in your pitch. It's one of my key things I teach. So what it tells me when people don't have an ask, after all the content I've done on asking, and if someone's on my show and spent all that money to prepare, is that they must not actually be comfortable and confident in articulating the value to exceed what they're asking for if they don't ask. So that's the number one red flag that I see. Credibility, red light and green light by the amount of work you put in to be credible. And then I love someone also that uses capability as an infusion of value, not as benefits and features. So for me, one of the key green flags is that someone is using the capabilities of the product, service, solution, or their brand to infuse value instead of just feature and benefiting dumping on me and making assumptions that I find that valuable, that, you know, it's a green car when you didn't even ask me if I like green.
There's a lot to take away from that last bit here. I'm actually very surprised when it comes to people who don't know what their ask is. And, you know, if you've watched these shows, it's like an entire presentation goes on. And at the end, they're like, it's almost like they're asking you to tell them what to ask. And I've seen that at a smaller scale. And I know there's a lot of, for example, people that might be in the coaching industry and they want to find some clients, but they haven't even packaged their value proposition. They almost be like, I'm amazing, I can help you. It's almost putting the responsibility on the buyer to come up with their ask. Have you seen that a lot? And like, what's the core work they need to go do to flip that around and have a proper ask?
Yeah, well, number one, practice, right? We get better only by practice. That's human nature. That's conscious continuum behaviors. That is the key to life, is good behavior creates good progress. Bad behavior interferes with it. So make sure that you're practicing good behaviors. But I see it a lot. And I see it a lot because people lose sight of the objective, right? It's very simple. The objective is to be able in the end to articulate a quantitative value to exceed what we're asking for. And then the nuance behind the ability to articulate a quantitative value to exceed what we're asking for is the difference between perceived value and bottom line. And this is one of the most valuable lessons I give, is that perceived value is a very simple thing. It's your comfort level and your confidence in what the value is. That is it. And I see this more in the coaching and speaking world than anywhere else. What is the difference between my $100,000 asking price for speeches and John Assaroff's $25,000 asking price for speeches? It's not that I'm four times a better speaker than John Assaroff. I'm four times more comfortable and confident in articulating the value of me stepping on your stage. It's a perceived value. Now, bottom line, it's very simple as well. The bottom line of my ask is very simple. It's math. It's, I have determined beforehand not only my comfort level and confidence in articulating a value to exceed what I'm asking for, but I also am extremely comfortable and confident in the math, meaning I am not going to step on that stage for less than 50 grand for a whole variety of reasons. It might be a weekend. I might have to miss my son's golf tournament or football game, or, you know, I have to fly for 2 days to get there. There's a whole bunch of reasons why your bottom line changes. Or I might do it for free because it's 1 mile away on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock for a charity. Right? Now, the difference between Dave Meltzer and most people on the earth is when that charity calls me to speak and they say, how much are you to come at 4 o'clock and speak to a bunch of kids to help them? I will tell them I'm $100,000 a speech, and they will say, whoa, that is too much. And then I'll say, well, what is your budget? Actually, we're hoping that you would do it for free. Absolutely. I will tell you that invariably, my introduction when I'm there is far more escalated in my value, in the appreciation of everyone there when they find out I'm a $100,000 speaker and I'm taking my time to do it for free, is easily four times the appreciation that John Assaroff comes if he does it for free and tells them that he's $25,000 a speech, which most of the time, most of those speakers, they don't do that. They immediately say, oh my gosh, it's a charity. It's a mile away from my house. It's 4 o'clock. I don't have anything prioritized at that time. I'd be happy to come for free. You're missing an opportunity. I'm actually more appreciated and they feel better and get more value out of my speech because of my perceived value at the same bottom line that you did.
Dave, this is one of the most important lessons people need to have, and I think it's very much tied to the self-worth. I can tell you've done the work, and I think this is the critical work I want people to do. If you had one piece of advice to give to someone who would want to get to that point where whatever they pitch, they feel confident and worthy of that price, what's something that you'd want them to take away from this conversation?
It's my favorite thing, and it's a piece of advice that Bob Parsons, the founder of GoDaddy, gave me. He exited for $4.2 billion personally from GoDaddy. I was interviewing him at the Super Bowl, and he's in his 70s, remarkable guy, super kind. And he said, you know, Dave, if you love what you do, and you could see me in the interview, just like we are here face to face, roll my eyes, because I was about to be so disappointed that someone I looked up to in such regard was about to say, if you love what you do, you're never going to work a day in your life. I swear he was going to say that. And I think that's bullshit. You know, I'm sorry. I definitely love what I do. I love football, but it was hard work to practice to be able to play 4 plays off the bench. It was hard. It was not easy. So that was bullshit to me. But he didn't say that. Here's the lesson for everybody. He said, Dave, if you love what you do, but you learn to love what you don't like or don't love, and you learn to love what other people don't like and don't love, and you're able to enjoy it every day, practice it every day, consistently, persistently, without quitting, because it's not the mistakes that you're going to make, Dave. It's the lack of commitment that will stop you from success. So if you learn to love what you don't like or don't love, or other people don't like or don't love, and you learn to do it every day consistently, persistently, in the pursuit, David, of your potential, your perceived value, not other people's, not what's missing, not what you don't have, not what you're worried about, not worthy of, but other people's opinion, life will give you all its secrets. It'll make life easy. It'll give you the cheat codes, and it'll take away the dis-easy. And so I want everyone, when they're talking about value and vision, to make life easy, to give them the cheat codes. And the only way to do that that I know is to practice and enjoy the practice every day, consistently, persistently, in the pursuit of your potential, your perceived value. Once again, I'd love to give everyone my 5 perfect pitch tips. I'd love to give everyone my book. I'll sign it, send it to you, pay for shipping, pay for the book. It's all free. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I personally answer all of my own emails, david@dmeltzer.com. Let's do more together, my friend. We share a symbiotic perspective of selling. What a great place to be. Sell with love, everyone. I appreciate you.
I think this is the first of many. David, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love the journey. I love where you're at. And I think for everybody else tuning in, they love exactly what they can take away from this amazing conversation. Take care, enjoy, and we will speak again soon. Take care, everyone. Go out there, sell with love, understand your value, and realize that you're going to have the keys to the secrets if you follow the advice you've heard today. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.